Rabbi, what page? Aza Daf.
That's precisely what I'm about to announce. We find ourselves on Yud Amid Aleph on 10A.
10A.
10A. And we're up to the words Kama Yehe Ben Sukkah LeSukkah. So it should be about a quarter way down. I would imagine Art Scroll would indicate it's a new section, or at least a new one of their paragraphs. So we're asking the question, how much room? I'll just start explaining now. Hopefully, if you have trouble finding a place, let me know. So we.
Yeah, I'm having trouble. I'm having trouble.
You are having trouble. So yeah, should I give some? Can I give background while you're looking for it? Or
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, good. So I'll give some background. And then if after not giving background, you still need me to buy you some more time, let me know.
It's after Peshitta.
What?
Peshitta. It's after Peshitta. The next line.
Afterwards, Kamash Malan.
Yeah, well, Peshitta starts that one. Okay, whatever. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what we learned last time, unless I'm on the wrong job. No, I think I'm on the right one.
No.
Okay, right. What we learned last time was that a sukkah on top of another sukkah generally renders the bottom sukkah puzzle. So the question the Gemara is now starting off with is, Kama yehe ben sukkah l'sukkah utetachtona pesula? How much space does there need to be between both the schach of the upper sukkah and the schach of the lower sukkah, in order to say that we don't have, you see, one way I can conceptualize it is, if they're within relatively close proximity to each other, they're really one big schach that just has a little bit of space in between. The other, however, if there's a significant amount of distance between them, then we would say it's a sukkah on top of a sukkah. You can't just say that schach all the way up there is really just an extension of the schach down here. So the question is, though, where do we delineate this? What is the threshold? Where's the line between determining whether we have two separate schachos or if we have one schach with just a little bit of gap in between? So, all right, we found the place. Very good. So again, how much room between it would render the bottom sukkah puzzle? Amar Rav Huna tefach. It would be a tefach. Shechem atzina ba'olei tuma tefach. So, okay, I'll bring in the pictures in just a moment, but let me read it, and then I'll come back with the pictures so we can better understand it. So when it comes to the laws of Tumah and Tahara, so you have a cadaver, you have, or a piece of a human, we're not going to get into all the details now, how much you need precisely in order to convey Tumah, but let's just say, for argument's sake, there's a full dead Jewish body right over there, okay? And there is a board over him, some sort of wooden board or something. So the shear for it is a tefach. What do we mean by a tefach? The Tanya, tefach al tefach barom tefach. So you have it, you have some sort of roofing over. It's a tefach wide, a tefach long, and a tefach in height. So that's enough. Maybe es hatuma b'chotzeitz b'fnei hatuma. So here's the picture of it. Thought I had it. Page. Oh, here we go. Okay. This is where it gets a little bit challenging. Let me turn the E. I have
it. It's not on the screen.
Yeah. Give me a second.
You have to move it in front of your face.
Thank you. I was adjusting the blur on here. Just give me a second. Okay.
There we go.
All right. Yeah. So you see the picture over here. Basically, here is the board. Now I have to make sure I see it as I'm showing it to you. Over here, apparently they didn't want to actually put a real dead body in here. I guess they want to keep it PG. So there is a dead body over here. And so right above the dead body, on top of the board that interposes between them, is a cup that has something that's tahor, that's okay in there. And then under the same roof, but not directly over it, right? So it shares on the x-axis, not the y-axis, there is something else that also is, we would hope, to be tahor. So if this bar is a tefach, so then what it's going to do is it'll interpose, it'll protect the thing that is on directly above the tumah because it's a tefach thick. But since it's substantial, it's going to create like an ohel, and that means the tumah will transfer even to something that was not directly over. Understood? Okay. Now I have to get some circulation back into my arm. all right. So that is the case. Back into the words of the Gemara. Tevach ha-tevram, tevach, maybe it's a tumah. So when there is a tefach, it's able to transport the tumah to something next to it, but it's also chotzeitz b'fnei ha-tumah, aiming directly over the mace. If there's board goes between them, it will protect it from becoming tameh. Aval pachos may roam tefach lo may vilo chotzeitz ever. If that roofing is not significant enough, it will not be able to transport the tumah into something else under that surface. But that means also, since it's flimsy and insignificant, that means there's nothing stopping the tumah from shooting straight up and being metame something that's over it, even though there is technically something interposing between the mace and between whatever object we think is going to become tame. All right, we have that picture relatively clear. I hope the picture helped a little bit. Hopefully it's clear enough. Okay, so tevach is one opinion. Rav Chista, Rav Abba, Rav Huna, Amre, Arba. They say no. Four tvachim. Shalom matzinu makum chashuv pachos me arba. So they say it's four tvachim. Why? Because if you look at Rashi says, what do you mean by makum chashuv? So Rashi says, liyos rishus la'atzmo, lo karmelis v'lo rishus ha'yachid pachos me arba tvachim. In the laws of Shabbos, the minimum dimension to have a private domain or to have a karmelis, which is considered to be a public domain on a rabbinical level, you need to have at least four tfachim of space. If you have less than four tfachim, you have a makom pater instead. So since we see in Hilchos Shabbos this idea that in order for something to be have the minimum dimensions of being a significant space in halacha is four tfachim, so once there's more than four tfachim between the lower sach and the upper sach, they are indeed two separate roofs. They do not combine, and therefore you have a sukkah on top of a sukkah, which means the bottom one is a pasul sukkah. That's shita number two. Now, three out of three, the final one, Ushmul Amar Asara. Where do we get 10 tfachim from? Actually, this should be the one that's probably most familiar to us. My time at the Shmuel, kehechshera kach pesula. The way a sukkah becomes kosher is the way it gets disqualified as well. Ma hechshera ba'asara, af pesula ba'asara. Just as a sukkah requires 10 tefachim to become a kosher sukkah, that's the minimum height of a sukkah, so too, 10 tefachim is a significant enough of space to say if there's 10 tefachim between the schach here and the schach there, then they indeed are two separate domains. You have a sukkah on top of a sukkah. And just to take a moment, I guess I could always look further. I'm sure someone makes this connection. I didn't see anyone immediately when I was looking into it. This idea is very interesting. It's very interesting.
Bolo kach polto.
Ah, very good, Phyllis. Yes. All right. See, I told you I wasn't the first one to think of it. Phyllis already thought of it. Very good. So I'll just elaborate for those who might not be as familiar, but excellent. This is similar, as Phyllis says, to the idea of Kabbalah Kach Polto, that the way something becomes non-kosher is also how you kosher it. If you cook treif in a pot with boiling water or boiling liquid, the way you kosher it is with boiling liquid. If something became non-kosher through direct heat, like in an oven, so then the way you kosher it is with flame, also with direct heat. So it's this very similar intuitive idea, just the opposite here. Kesher kach psula. So here it's the way it becomes kosher is the way it becomes possible. But the idea is that there is the same method can be used to make something okay and also make something problematic. It's the same, what's the right word? Metric. We're using the same metrics here. That's the point. Very good. All right. So maybe if I look in the Kovei's Mefarshim, maybe there's like, you know, the Perish Aphilis in there or something. Okay, we'll find it. All right, moving forward. The final, so just a glance back at the Mishnah for a moment on the top of Tesim and Beis, or if you don't want to flip all the pages in Art Scroll, because I know it's a little bit more arduous, you can listen and take my word for it, or I'm sure Art Scroll probably fills you in over there. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says at the end of the Mishnah, Im ein diurim b'alyona hatachtona k'sheira. He says, yes, in general, a sukkah on top of a sukkah is an issue, but if there's no diurin, I'm purposely not translating that yet because the Gemara is going to ask what that is. If there are no diurin in the upper sukkah, then the bottom sukkah is kosher. Now, Tanan, back to the Gemara, right? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imein diurin b'alyona hatachtona k'sheira. So Rabbi Yehuda said that there are no diurin on the top one, the bottom one is kosher. So, right, we're all wondering, my ein diurin, what do we mean there are no diurin? So, ilema diurin mamesh, ata diurin kagarmi? So, if we mean diurin, like residents in the sukkah, should it make a difference whether there are people who are actually residing in the upper sukkah? The psul is that if you have a sukkah on top of a sukkah, it renders the bottom one invalid. It doesn't make sense that it should matter whether people are functionally actually on the upper sukkah. It's an inherent structural issue. It shouldn't matter whether anyone's actually utilizing it. So Ella, my in the urine, kol she'in ru'uya ledira. So what is it referred to? It means any. Okay. Ella, my in the urine, kol she'in ru'uya ledira means that the upper sukkah is not ro'oi for dira. So meaning the upper sukkah is not livable structurally. The heki dami, and what would that mean that the upper sukkah is not viable structurally? Well, like we were just talking about, delo gova asara, it's not 10 tefachim tall. It doesn't have the minimum dimension of a sukkah. So because the upper sukkah doesn't really have a shein sukkah, it doesn't have the halachic status of a sukkah because it doesn't have the minimum dimension of a sukkah. So what's the disqualification we're worried about here? Of a sukkah on top of a sukkah renders the bottom sukkah puzzle. But if you don't have a top sukkah, it's not called a sukkah, then you don't have the psul of a sukkah on top of a sukkah, right? Yeah. Okay. So I had a lot of good logic here tonight. So Michlal, but the issue is that Rabbi Yehuda's Svara makes so much sense. What was the Tana Kama in the Mishnah who disagrees? The Tana Kama says that the bottom will still be possible anyway. So Michlal, Tana Kama, Svara, I'll be in a Rui Ladir Psula. But what then was the logic of the Tana Kama to disagree? If I don't have a sukkah with the minimum dimension of a sukkah, then I don't have a sukkah. So then what's the issue according to the Tana Kama? So here we have, depending on how you count in the Gemara, either our second or our third suggestion. Ki asa Rav Dimi Amar Amri b'ma'arava im ein adachtona yechol lakava karmuch satsa sha'al yona hatachtona kishera. So what is the determining factor? Nothing to do with people functionally, or not functionally, not to do with people physically actually being up there, but functionally, can this upper sukkah support cushions and pillows? Can it support putting some basic furniture in there? And if it can, we have a problem. But if not, then it means, again, that we don't have a real livable structure up there. And if we don't have a real livable structure, it's not a, right? The sukkah we hold generally is a diras arai. It's a temporary dwelling place. But even though it's temporary, it's a temporary dwelling place. You have to be able to dwell in it still. So if it can't hold up some basic furniture in there, so then that's not called a sukkah, and then the bottom one is kosher. But again, we run into the same issue. Rabbi Yehuda's shita makes so much sense. Michlal tana kama tzar al vishina ruhi lekavam psula. But this would imply that the chachamim, the tana kama, held that it would be puzzle regardless. So why would the chacham hold its puzzle if the upper sukkah can't support anyone dwelling in it? So we have to split hairs a little bit. Ika benayu, this is the distinction between them. Yechola kaba ayde hatcha. What if you could put some cushioning, some stuff in there, but it's a little flimsy and, you know, we have to start worrying about the structural integrity of it. You know, like you could just make it, right? It's like you get on the elevator and it says 500 pound limit, you know, and we're all getting in there. People are bringing their books and their strollers and it's like just ricketing up very slowly. So if it's like that, so that's where our debate exists. Rabbi Huda would say, if it's only able to just barely hold everyone up, then that's not called a sukkah. Whereas a chum would say, no, even though it's not the sturdiest thing, it's still a legitimate sukkah. And since it's a real, genuine sukkah, it renders a sukkah on bottom of it, psula. So that is the end of the idea. And by the way, just someone, I forgot who it was, I'm not going to do justice. There's like every sukkah is like on Facebook, someone circulates around a post where it's like, you know, people are just like sitting in Kailo learning all year, but all of a sudden sukkah comes and they become the world's best architect. And like, you know, you see all these like sukkahs in the apartments in Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak, and like they're standing on like three beams, Torah, Vodun, and Gemilas Chasadim, I guess. But you know, you're busy like praying for them that nothing happens. You know, like here's like where the balcony ends, and then the sukkah juts out all the way over here. So you know, we don't want a sukkah that's only able to hold us up. We definitely don't want that.
You know, Moshe, I'm having a problem with this whole discussion. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
A sukkah is supposed to be covered with skach. A skach is supposed to provide shade, but it's supposed to also let in some amount of sunlight. So you don't put up a sukkah under a tree because the branches with their leaves will shade out the sukkah and the skach doesn't function. You don't build a sukkah under a balcony because the balcony will block out the sun and the skach isn't letting in any sunlight. So my conception is you don't put a sukkah over another sukkah because the floor of that sukkah, forget about its skach, the floor is going to block sunlight from the skach underneath unless that upper sukkah is way high and the sunlight can get in.
Right. I totally agree with your problem. I have the same problem.
Okay. So this is important because if you look in Rashi, you don't have to, but you can listen or you can look. Rashi, Dibur Maskel Ki Asura Dini Amar Ami B'Marava. At the end, he says, Mehai Taima Deshmul Devshira Kach Psula. Basically, what Rashi understands is that Rabbi Yehuda's whole contention is based on the previous Gemara we learned at the beginning of the Shir, which is that it's not that the top sukkah necessarily is not a valid sukkah, but it's that since it's within 10 tefachim, we actually look at it conceptually like the top skach and the bottom skach are really one skach. So then they're actually both together functioning to provide shade for the sukkah.
Well, but your grandfather's right. What about the floor of the top sukkah? How can that be on top of the lower one and the lower one still be valid? Here's sukkah A.
Yeah.
Lower. Here's sukkah B.
Right.
You're covering sukkah A. How can that be okay? Why is it not okay to be under a tree?
Right. What's covering? What's the issue?
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not
a floor. A floor has to have a floor.
Maybe it's not an actual floor. It's like a mesh.
As we said, that it's not a floor actually, because the upper sukkah is not a sukkah. It's not a floor structurally speaking. If it's less than 10 tefachim, then we don't call that a floor. We call that a roof with some gap in between the upper part of the roof and the lower.
But how could somebody on the top one be sitting on that? How can you sit in the air? I mean, there's got to be a floor.
Yeah. Well,
if that floor is on top of my skach, it's right, blocking the sun.
So we consider a floor if the upper sukkah has a minimum of 10 tefachim. And if the upper sukkah has a minimum of 10 tefachim, it's a separate sukkah. And then you're right, the bottom sukkah is possible.
The question is, will sunlight reach the
body? How does sunlight
reach the skach? Isn't functioning as a skach?
Because this bottom skach is really seen as combining with the upper skach when there's less than 10 tefachim. So it's the fact that sunlight is being blocked mostly by the upper skach is okay, because the upper skach and the lower skach are conceptually one skach because there's less than 10 tefachim in between them.
Then it's one sukkah, not...
Exactly. In a case like that, that's what would make the bond sukkah kosher.
All I know is I don't want anybody to bother me about trees anymore after listening to this.
Well, that was last week's discussion.
Yeah, so I know. I'm glad I missed you, because that's always been a great source of annoyance. No, I mean, you've got a tree that's 20 feet up in the air, and this is creating a problem?
So there's a legitimate discussion we had, actually, that if a tree is really far up and it's actually not really blocking much of the skach, then you might not have an issue. This is all the Gemara beforehand.
Sorry, I was away. I'm sorry.
it's a good question.
It becomes a familial issue.
Okay.
Moshe, you're saying we have a two-story sukkah.
Yeah.
And the skach on above the top floor functions as skach. We don't have to worry about the skach on the
second floor because it's not skach on the lower one.
All right.
Shouldn't even need skach on the lower one then.
All right. Maybe I'm not fully understanding, or maybe I'm not doing a good job explaining it, but we'll leave it as a tzarachian for now. Because we have some other delightful material to get to, but hold me to it. We could certainly circle back. Maybe I'll understand the question better. Okay. Let's go to the next Mishnah. So exciting, covering all these Mishnayos all of a sudden. So, right, we've been talking about trees. We've been talking about sukkahs blocking sukkahs. Let's get to something that's like a little bit more, well, trees do come up more often, but something a little bit more frequent than a sukkah on top of a sukkah. Let's talk about decorations in a sukkah. Are decorations going to be an issue? So just to manage our expectations, we're going to begin the discussion tonight, but the rest of the sugya continues next week, so we'll begin discussing it. Okay. So let's say you place some kind of sheet over your schach to protect you from the sun. Right? Apparently your schach's not doing a good enough of a job with that. Or you put it under the schach in order to catch any falling leaves. Or you put it on top of a, right? You ever see, like, you go to one of those restoration villages, and they have, like, you know, when we went to Old Sturbridge, they had, like, the big gvir in town had the real big fancy manor, and we went in, and we saw, like, you know, the bed had these four poles, had this whole tapestry over it, right? You know what I'm talking about? So it had the four poles coming up on four ends. So the mitzvah, ideally, is that one is supposed to sleep in the sukkah. So someone really wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Teshu Kain Tuduru to real, right? There's the idea is that Teshu Kain Tuduru, you're supposed to bring your china in. You're supposed to bring all the fancy things from your house to really make it feel like you're living there. So they brought in a bed, and he put Arba Kundisin, he put four different poles on each side, and he draped something over it. So that also would be an issue, because you're going to be basically sleeping under this tapestry instead of sleeping under the schach. Avo porisu al gabi naklite hamita. But naklite hamita is okay. What is naklite hamita? I will show you a picture of a naklite hamita, because sometimes the pictures just show it to you better. If I can find it in 2 seconds, if not, I will just explain it out loud. Naklite hamita. This is so funny. They don't give me the picture over here. Okay. I think we could all use our imaginations. Instead of four corners, imagine at the end, in the middle of each bed, there is a pole in the front of the bed and a pole at the end of the bed, and then you drape something over it. Thank you, Toby. Okay,
it looks like it's, I don't know if you can see it.
I see it.
It looks like a tent. It looks like a tent on top of the bed. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you, Toby. So Rashi tells us that this mishum de ein lo gag rochev tefach lamalo mikri ohel, since basically you take one sheet and you drape it over both these poles, but there isn't even a tefach of something ovary, right? Remember, we talked about a tefach could be a minimum measurement sometimes for an ohel, like in Tuma. So if there's not even a tefach, it immediately just slants down in a triangle, you're not really considered to be under an ohel, under a tent for halachic purposes, and that's considered to be under the schach, categorically speaking. Okay, so that is the Mishnah. Amar al-Chista, writing to the Gemara. La shana l'binan asher avolinosa kishera. So we said in the Mishnah, well, you know, the Mishnah was a little bit verbose. All the Mishnah had to say was, if you put a sheet between the schach and between you, then you have a pasul sukkah, or you're not considered to be in a proper, you're not in the sukkah properly. So from the fact that the Mishnah went ahead to explain when is it an issue to put a sheet, something interposing between you and the schach, when it is done for a functional purpose, because then it indicates that you have something problematic with your sukkah. But if you put something in there for decorative purposes, it would be kosher. That's the inference there of Chista makes. Now the Gemara says, Pshita, it says in the Mishnah explicitly that what are we concerned with? Only when there are leaves, right? I don't need the great Rav Chista to come along and make this inference. That's the obvious inference that, of course, we all made from the Mishnah, that if it's done for decorative purposes, it would not invalidate the sukkah. Well, here is the Havamina that we would have had. Madatema, huadindafila nosa, bayitani b'nei nashar, orcha demil sukkatani. I would have thought the same. The Mishnah, yeah, sometimes we see this, that the Mishnah or Gemara could be a little verbose and will kind of give an example just to illustrate the point. But it, you know, I could have easily walked away from the Mishnah thinking that in general, anything interposing between the schach and myself would invalidate the sukkah. Kamash Molan, if you're doing it for the purpose of noise sukkah, to enhance the beauty of the sukkah, then your sukkah is still kosher. And then the Gemara says, maybe, tentatively, Le Misayele, we have a brisa that supports this point. What does the brisa say? So the brisa is talking about the issue of muksa. This came up recently. We talked about this, that your sukkah is muksa, meaning since it is hooked, we usually think of muksa, by the way, in halacha, like on Shabbos, something is muksa, it's set aside, it doesn't have a use on Shabbos. Something could also be huksa le mitzvah, that is designated for mitzvah purposes. You know, if you decide in the middle of Yom Tov, you want to use your esrog for, and make esrog jelly out of it, you're not allowed to do that yet. You have to wait till after Yom Tov, because your four species are still hooks of the mitzvah. They are designated for the mitzvah. So similarly over here, for your sukkah and all the things that are ancillary to the sukkah also are hooks of the mitzvah, and you're not allowed to use it for other purposes on Yom Tov. So the Braitza says, Sicha kihilchasa. So let's say you put proper schach on, meets all the different specifications that we have been learning about. Vitra, Krumen, so you start putting on all these different kinds of cloths, these different kinds of embroidery. Betolaba, it goes in Shkedim, Afrasakin, Rimonim. You put all these different nuts and almonds and peaches and pomegranates. Brachilia Navim, you put clusters of grapes. Batarshal Shivalim, and different sheaves of grain. Yenos, Shmein, Muslasos. Rashi explains, you're not just throwing wine on top of your sukkah. Rashi says, Bekosa Shal Skuchas. You put wine, apparently it's a design, right? You put wine in the bottle and then you hang it from it, right? Some people do that. You know, they don't just have wine in their house, but they have like some sort of these, I don't know what you call it, these fancy crevices that are built into the wall. You can stick the wine in. So not only there for functional purposes, but it's also decorative. So you do that with your sukkah as well. Also, listapik mehen ad motze yontif ha'achron shel chag b'mhista aleihem ha'kol afitno. So you're generally, unless you make an explicit stipulation, by default, you're not allowed to use them until after Yom Tov because you put them up for decorative purposes. If you stipulate and say, I'm putting it in here for a functional purpose, I plan to actually take some of this wine and use it for Kiddush on Yom Tov, then that's okay. But what's the point here? The point here is that the only issue the Brisa identifies is the issue of something being muksa. It assumes, it presupposes that there's no issue of the validity of the schach by you putting all these designs hanging from your sukkah. So it would seem from this brisa that one is allowed to hang up a noise sukkah. You're allowed to put up different decorations, and it would not diminish the validity of the sukkah. However, while we do accept this as halacha, this brisa is not the slam dunk that we would think it is, because I can answer dilma min hatzah. Maybe all these different things being put in the sukkah, whoever said I was hanging them from the ceiling, maybe I was putting them off on the side. Maybe they're on the wall. So we don't really have a good proof from this brisa to our point, but that is nonetheless the halacha. Now let's just get in one last little piece over here, just to get more than two lines in. Itmar, noi sukkah imematim besukkah. So here's something interesting that we'll elaborate on in just a moment. So we just learned that if you have noise sukkah, you have decorations hanging from your sukkah. So let's say, though, I have a sukkah that is only 10 tefachim tall. If I put decorations in there, I functionally no longer have 10 tefachim because, you know, all those things are busy hanging down. I remember we made all sorts of different decorations as kids. So we used to, I don't know why, but it's like a thing. You go to the sukkah shops, like sukkah despot or whatever the place they're called.
I don't know.
I got that joke, by the way, from Rabbi Chaim Bronstein, who's used to give a shiur at Bayswater all the time. So he would always call it sukkah despot. So that's, I've been the Kabbalah. When you see the prices, you're like, so the point being is, I don't know, so I'll just give an example. So they always had those birds, and we had birds hanging from our sukkah. But then we also, as kids, we had like these dinosaur action figures. So one time we took like a dinosaur action figure, we hung it on the bird, so it looked like the dinosaur was eating the bird, which now I realize they're actually the ancestors of the birds or something. So it's all poetic. So the point is, there's all sorts of crazy things you can be sticking in your sukkah that's going to be hanging down, and you're going to be busy bumping your head on it just like we always did. So the question is, would that affect the validity of the minimum height of the sukkah? In fact, by the way, this is very surprising, because if you remember all the way back on, I'm turning the pages back, was it Hayam and Bates, back in 5b, we noted that it wasn't just enough for the sukkah to have 10 tefachim with the schach, but we needed a halal. We needed an empty airspace of 10 tefachim. We couldn't even count the schach towards the 10 tefachim. And we had to have a whole separate limud for that. So what's interesting here is that noi sukkah will not diminish the height of the 10 tefachim of the sukkah. But if you put them on the side of the sukkah, such that they are infringing on your minimum 7x7 tefachim, then it would invalidate the sukkah, which raises a big question. If you look in Tosos already begins to talk about this a little bit. Tosos Noi Sukkah, he quotes Rashi, and then at the end of Noi Sukkah, the Bali Tosos say, if you remember, we learned, going even further back on 4a, on Dalet Amud Aleph, we learned that if they're Hutzin Yordan L'Sukkah, there's pieces of branches that are starting to dip down from the schach into the sukkah, such that you functionally don't have 10 tefachim of space. Rava taught us that that actually invalidates the schach. So what's different over here? The difference over there is that mishum dira srucha, because there it makes it difficult for you to live in it. The shiny hacha denoya same. Whereas over here, the fact that you deliberately are putting decorations in here doesn't diminish the livability of the space. Because what was the issue, according to Rava? I, in principle, have a 10 tefach space. It's just a very difficult 10 tefach space to live in. So, but if I'm putting decorations in there, I'm obviously happy that my decorations are there. So it's not going to diminish from the quality of the living experience in my sukkah. That's one way to put it. The other way is the Aruch Lener also addresses this. The Aruch Lener gives a different distinction. The Aruch Lener says, he gives two answers, actually. One answer he gives is that there's a distinction between lichachila and bidieved. Tahachal inyam psul sukkah bidieved ayri. So the Aruch HaNer says that actually both these gemaras are very consistent. They're just addressing, in the case of Dalam and Alam, and somebody hoots in Yordan the sukkah, and that those hoots in coming down are going to invalidate your sukkah, that's a lichachila, you're not allowed to set it up as such. In our gemara, though, it's saying, bidieved, if you hung up the decorations and you didn't account for the space, bidieved, it won't invalidate your sukkah. Okay, fine. But we still need to also understand, why is it that that we are okay when the decorations are diminishing the 10 tefachim of minimum height that we need, but we're not really okay when it diminishes it from the side, if it diminishes the minimum 7x7 tefachim that I need. So there's a few answers given. The Aruch HaNer says, Umad etzar gova asar lo yadam rak nidrasha. Where do we get the idea of 10 tefachim? This is a novel idea. It's not that 10 tefachim is really functionally the minimum amount of space I need to sit in the sukkah. Rather, on Haman Bays, if you remember at the end of the Gemara, we learned that we have a drasha, or is it halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, which teaches us that 10 tefachim is the shear for sukkah. 10 tefachim for mechitza, 10 tefachim for sukkah, 10 tefachim of the aron. 10 tefachim is just a general drasha that we have, that's the minimum shear when we're talking about height. But that doesn't mean that less than 10 tefachim is not considered a livable space necessarily. Whereas, when we talked about l'chein l'mayav d'lo pasul rak mitam diras rucha, k'shilin noy, lo havi le'torah, okay. Avomen hatzad, but when we're talking about diminishing the space on the side, d'lo havi roi l'yeshiva, avi asoy l'noy gagim su'a. There, less than 7x7 tefachim is not a livable space. So even though you might enjoy the idea that you have your bird decorations or your Gedolim posters or whatever, if it's somehow the way you hang it up, I mean, I guess the Gedolim posters take a nominal amount of space. Your Gedolim action figures that are hanging in there. I don't know if that's a thing. I hope it's not a thing. You have your Gedolim action figures that are taking up space. So then that's not considered livable space. So that's an interesting distinction. The 7x7 is just, that's considered livable space. 10 tefachim, that's a little bit negotiable. You need 10 tefachim still, but in terms of functional space in there, if it's for noise sukkah, that's all right. That's the Aruch HaNer. Okay, let's get to a more fun question. I mean, they're all fun. I want to get to something. So I'm bringing back, it's been a while, bringing back our good friend Rav Zilberstein, the Chashuki Chemen. Now, Rav Zilberstein, just a quick refresher, what he does is he supplements a lot of the blot here with interesting halach lemaisa questions. So his question is as follows. Shela, Adam Har, now you'll see how it connects in a moment, so just be patient on this one. Shela, Adam Harotz Lechavi as a Shabbos, Lechin Rotz Lehesei Leshulchan Shabbos, Gan Mechubon Madarim. So someone wants to honor Shabbos by wearing, Toby, you saw this one already, right? You commented on the post on Facebook. This was the post.
Uh-huh, right.
But now you get to hear the full thing.
Great.
So someone wants to honor Shabbos, and therefore they, not only at shul do they want to wear a suit or whatever the equivalent is for women, they ever wants to wear their dress clothing. So not only are they wearing their dress clothing at shul, but they want to wear their dress clothing at the Shabbos table as well, which, by the way, is a story with Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Willig was one of his students, and apparently they were having a Shabbos meal together, and Rav Willig took off his jacket to get a little comfortable, and Rav Soloveitchik rebuked him and said, "What are you doing taking your jacket?" He's like, "What do you mean? We're having a meal. We're sitting down. We're no longer at shul." He said, "Do you think Kavod Shabbos is limited to the Beis HaKnesses? Kavod Shabbos is a din in the day of Shabbos. So you're always supposed to be wearing your suit, no matter where." Maybe went to sleep in a suit also. I don't really know. But it's a fair point that he makes. So many people at the Shabbos table, they will keep their suit and tie on, or at least for benching, they might put it back on. So however, here's where the complication comes in. Ach begodim elohim chamim ha'od. But, imagine it's the summertime, not a day like today, apparently, where it doesn't feel like summer. I'm happy with that. and you're wearing your strimal, you're wearing your, you know, your kapata, whatever you got, and you're schmaltzing in it. Then Yahweh is somehow dover yigram lo sevel she has yaharbe. You're sweating bullets, and you feel very uncomfortable. And yilvash some lemoros hasevel sheba hazeya. Are you obligated to still wear those clothing, the big day Shabbos, even though you are uncomfortable? Now, I was so excited when I saw this question, because as many of you know, that's the sugya I'm in the middle of putting material together on the sugya of Istinus. And I was so excited when I found this, because I immediately put it on my source sheet. But how does this connect to our Gemara, you might be asking? We're almost there to the big reveal. So the Rav Zilberstein answers that he heard reported in the name of the Chazan Ish, Shem Ein Bebegadim Oneg Shabbos, that if you are not enjoying Shabbos by wearing such clothing, Ein Bezegamishum Kavod Shabbos, then you're not fulfilling the imperative of honoring Shabbos as well. You hear that? If it's a lack of owning Shabbos, it's a lack of Kavod Shabbos as well. And what's his proof? He quotes a tshuva of the Rashba. What does the Rashba say? Sorry, I bought myself a set of tshuvas of Rashbas. I can actually read it straight from the Rashba, which is nice. So the Rashba says, never mind. I have the wrong volume of Rashba here with me. It was a different tshuva. I was looking at briefly. I'll read from here. Okay. So the tshuva of the Rashba is talking about our sugya. The Rashba asks the following question. The same question Tosos, Aruch HaNer, and everyone is dealing with. Why is it that when I have branches coming down to my sukkah, it invalidates it? But when I have decorations in the sukkah, it doesn't invalidate it. So the Rashba answers, Kol shehu lenoi eino sirchon, v'chol shehu sirchon eino noi. So if you have something that beautifies your sukkah, it's not going to be seen as making the sukkah less livable, more detestable, that's not the right word, more uncomfortable. But if you have something that makes living in a sukkah an unpleasant experience, then that is not called noi sukkah. So what happens is that it makes the experience almost a little bit subjective. And based on this distinction of the Rashba in our sugya here in Maseches Sukkah, Rav Zilberstein infers that the Rashba's distinction is actually, or rather, the Chazan Ish's distinction is really the same distinction in principle that the Rashba is making. So therefore, he concludes, Shim habeged machbed v'gorim la'aziya, that if you're wearing this clothing and it's causing you sweat, and you're just waiting for the meal to end already, and it's not owning Shabbos, Ein bezek kavod, then it's not honoring Shabbos either. Now, when I saw, as I said, this is the modern Orthodox kula we've all been looking for, right? Now we see that you don't have to wear a suit on Shabbos. Before we jump, it's important to note that he only seems to say this in the context of a meal on Shabbos. But as much as I'm biased to want to take this to the full extent, I have to be intellectually honest, it might be different when it comes to shul. Because what's the leniency over here? It's not that he's saying, because you are mitztayer, because you are uncomfortable, therefore we waive this all to the side. It's not a general patur of mitztayer, that anytime I'm uncomfortable, I don't have to do mitzvos. We'll discuss on a future shiur that there might be something like that out there. But what it means is that you're trying to do oneg and kavod Shabbos, and you're not having oneg Shabbos. The issue is when we're at shul, there isn't just a matter of kavod Shabbos. What else is there?
Kavod of hamakom.
Right, very good. There's kavod for the makom. There's a kavod for the Beis HaKnesses. So do I say if I'm not enjoying my time in shul, then it's not honoring shul? I guess, we could bring in a whole sugya of tirchid tzibura, Kavod HaTzibur, that'll really take us far afield. But anyway, I just thought it was really cool how Rav Zilberstein brought together that Rashba and our sugya and that question of whether one has to wear uncomfortable clothing on Shabbos or not.
Rabbi, can you clarify what this has to do with sukkah?
Yeah, the connection is that the Rashba is explaining why decorations in a sukkah are okay, whereas when there's branches in your sukkah that are taking up the same amount of space, they would invalidate the sukkah. And he basically saying is, if there's something making you uncomfortable in there, then that detracts from the quality of the sukkah. Whereas if it's something that you enjoy, that you feel adds to the sukkah, it would not disqualify the sukkah. We don't see it as taking away your space. So he's saying is, it's a similar kind of conceptual idea that if you're not enjoying yourself on Shabbos, then there's a lack of kavod Shabbos. He wants to.
I don't see the connection.
That's a clean analogy or not? But
I just don't see the connection.
All right, you want to be the first. One of my friends, who's a smart guy, reached out to me and said he expresses reservations about this. At any rate, it's still a great chazanish whether it connects well with the Rashba or not. So I'm putting that on my Makoro sheet. Anyway, any final comments or questions before we conclude this evening?
It seems to me that when you go to shul, you're going to petition Hashem for whatever is in the prayer service, everything that's in the prayer service. And you should go in the most respectful manner possible toward Hashem. And so it's not a matter of comfort. It's not a matter of enjoying Shabbos. You're there for a specific defined purpose. Happens to occur on Shabbos, and it may be more enhanced on Shabbos, but you're there for a defined purpose.
Absolutely. I fully agree that there's not only the element of owning Shabbos when you come to shul, there's reverence and awe that we have to have for the Beis HaKnesses, which, of course, when we were learning our previous Masechta Megillah in the final chapter, we dealt with all these rules about the honor of the Beis HaKnesses. So your point's very well taken. So that's okay.
Right. And it's not, I mean, even if you're davening at home, you don't
daven,
you have to have a certain respectful amount of clothing on.
So it makes a good point. You know, it's not just about honor for the place, for the makom, as you said, but there's also honor for tefillah. When I'm davening Shmona Esrei, especially when I'm davening Shmona Esrei, but theory all davening, you're supposed to be thinking how you're standing before a king. So when I go talk to a king in my sweatpants, probably not. Another thing to think about is not just Shabbos, but during the week. How we talk, you know, if it's the same Melech Malki and Melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu I'm talking to on weekdays as Shabbos. I'm pretty sure about that, right? So there's some sort of, there has to be some sort of minimum respectable amount of clothing. One of the question is, how far do you go? Like, do you have a tuxedo every time you come to Mincha? So in the yeshivish veld, that's why they have their hats and jackets. I'm not as yeshivish, so I just wear a jacket for davening. And in the morning, I suffice with a talus. So that way there's something special for davening.
No, going back to the bed with the four poles, it's called a four-poster bed, and it has a canopy on the top. And I never thought deeply about four-poster beds. They seem to me to serve no useful purpose other than the bed itself.
But I
think the canopy is there for protective purposes, just as the what drapes down along the four sides of the bed, amongst other things, to keep out insects. It's all there for protective purposes, and it's not decoration.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, maybe I need to do a little bit more research into this. Right. Okay. I guess what, Zadie, back in your day, this was more of a popular convention, or?
I'm not that old.
It was also to keep the people warmer in the bed.
He doesn't know that you had one.
It's still very popular. It's considered very chic to have one even now.
Yeah, I served in World War I, not in the Revolution.
Very good. That's a good line. All right, shkach, everyone. Speaking about Dominic and Mincha and everything.
Rabbi, question: did Rabbi Cohen go to Israel already?
No. He's still here through Shabbos, and then like Sunday night or Monday, something.
Monday.
Okay, so he does have his class tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well, that I can't speak to. I have no idea.
No, it's on the schedule. But you don't have class Monday night?
Not, no, I have a professional development conference, actually, on Sunday and Monday with Rabbi J.J. Schachter. They're doing this whole thing in New Jersey at a hotel and whatnot. So I have professional development Sunday and Monday. So Sunday, I'm going to give my shiur in the morning, and then I'm going to head straight out after that. So someone else will have to take the Bildadis home that day. Okay. All right. Take care, everyone.
Monday night.
No shiur Monday night.
No shiur.
I'm going to be on my way back from a conference.
Okay.
All right. But hopefully I'll come back a better rabbi and be able to get better shiur. All right. Take care, everyone.
Bye. Shalom.
Good job.